I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. I am your host, David Reed, and with me as ever is Marek Larwood. Hello, Marek.
Hello, I'm your host.
Well, we're both hosts, yes.
I know, but I felt like I wasn't saying it in an aggressive, challenging way.
All right, okay.
It sounded like I wanted to usurp you as the host.
Well, it's sort I should have said meta narrative to this episode.
I am also your host.
Yes, that is the case.
We've done 200 and something episodes, so I thought, why not start by arguing?
That's it. That never happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You arsehole.
No, you arsehole.
Oh.
And we're going to talk about films for a bit. No, it's not. It's a new direction for it all. We're going to talk about some films for you. Some in the cinemas, some on streaming services. That's basically what we do here. Has it been a good week, Marek? Has it been a good week?
What, in terms of life? In terms of life.
I mean, the backdrop to watching films.
Art versus life. I can't really talk about... I don't want to talk about the news because it's too depressing.
It is. It's getting to that point of sort of, in a tiny way, just in the background of everything, overwhelming me.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
And my life is also quite depressing.
Well, I saw a news article that we might be heading towards a mini ice age as well, so that would be extra good news, wouldn't it?
Well, the summer's been appalling.
Yeah.
But stay with us in this beacon of positivity
and escapism as we talk about Independence Day Resurgence.
I have seen trailers for this.
Yeah? What did you think?
Well, my first thoughts is that I'm surprised that you chose to see this.
Well, I can reassure you that I did not.
What, you were forced?
I was forced to. My friends were going to the cinema yesterday. I hadn't seen enough films to discuss films for today, mm-hmm. So I thought, perfect opportunity. But there were two of them, so I was outnumbered, and they'd already picked
who are these friends?
Well, I don't want, you know, my private life to really bleed over into this podcast particularly.
Okay.
But they were friends of the show, Martin Kavanagh and Andrew Pugsley, singer of The Showstoppers.
I know Martin Kavanagh, he's a very nice man.
He is a very nice man, yeah.
We support the same American football team and the same baseball team.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, and yet you're still not together. What's that about?
Yes, well, I might give him a call.
Yeah, so Independence Day, Resurgence. No, that sounds wrong. Colon Resurgence sounds bad.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, Colon Resurgence.
That would be brilliant.
No. Oh, the surgence of a colon's worse than... Oh.
Colon Resurgence.
Yeah. Basically, everything's about 1996 now, apparently. The most commercially successful film of 1996 was Independence Day. And the most sort of artistic...
It's 20 years since Independence Day.
Yeah, it's 20 years.
Holy shit.
I know. Probably the most iconic British film in 1996 is Trainspotting, and a sequel to that's coming back as well.
But Trainspotting seems older than Independence Day.
Same year.
In my head.
Same year.
Very odd.
Yeah. So, Independence Day, a big sort of explosive epic, famous for the shot of the White House being destroyed by alien lasers. And this is set 20 years to the day since the events of Independence Day, when, lo and behold, the aliens come back. And
so we're recording this before July the 4th.
Yeah.
So it
could still happen. Although, in the film, they've already combined alien technology with our own. So they've got, like, proper hovering helicopters and alien weaponry and a moon laser. Stuff like that.
Moon laser.
Moon laser, yeah. It starts with a moon laser scene.
That's a good name for a penis, isn't it?
Moon laser. Yeah, it is. Do you have a name for your penis?
No, I don't. Well, I think I might choose moon laser.
Moon laser. That's good. moon laser and colon resurgence. So this film, it's got Jeff Goldblum back in it, and Judd Hirsch playing his father, the guy from Taxi, and Will Smith is not in it. He asked for too much money, and they said no. And then President Bill Pullman is also back.
Mm-hmm. How can he still be president? He's not president.
He's not president. Okay. He's now ex-president, who is suffering from a mental condition from being exposed to the psychic hive mind of the aliens in Independence Day.
Oh.
Also, Brent Spiner is back in it, playing his crazy, slightly hippie-ish scientist in Area 51, and he is in it a lot. When he's a small character in Independence Day, it's mostly Brent Spiner, this film.
Brent Spiner?
He plays Commander Data in Star Trek The Next Generation as well.
Oh, okay.
That's where he was famous from. So anyway, the aliens come back, etc. This film, if you talked briefly about, when we talked about the do-over, about...
Yes.
Those lines of dialogue where people tell each other things that they ostensibly already know.
Yes.
You know, it's just like, Marek, my friend, who comes here every week to record Film Fandango, you'll never guess what happened to me here in my flat where I live. The entire film is lines like that.
Wow.
The entire film is expositional dialogue, but not only expositional, specifically characters telling each other things about each other they already know. This film is total dog shit.
The whole film?
The entire film is inexorable shite. Yeah, it is so pointless and boring, and there are too many characters, and every line of dialogue is expositional.
Is
and
it long
makes
as well?
No sense. It's 2 hours long. It doesn't need to be. Yeah, there's all the characters are boring. there's a character who is at least potentially interesting, but doesn't become interesting, who is an African warlord who carries two machetes around and has tattoos of tally marks up one arm of all of the aliens he's killed.
I was going to say, I bet he's good at killing aliens.
Yeah, and he knows how to kill them hand to hand, you see, that's his thing.
How do you kill them hand to hand?
You have to get behind them and stab them in the weak point in their back.
How do you get behind an alien?
You go, oh, look at that, over there!
He doesn't do that to anything,
does he? Doesn't that? He's a big, fat guy, and he slides under the alien's legs.
What did he do? Did he grease his back, then?
I think he must have a really greasy back.
So you have to grease your back?
You have to have, like, an old Ribena carton full of olive oil, like gaffer tape to the back of your head.
Yeah.
So it's constantly just dripping grease down your back, just in case, because you never know when the aliens are going to come.
You make some small fork marks in it.
Yeah, or a skewer, you know, like a meat skewer.
That'd be quite a lot, though. It's a small fork.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then how would you turn it on? Is there things you can turn it on?
You just have to keep refilling it at the top.
Okay.
So he is an African warlord, even though at the beginning they state that after the events of 1996, all humanity banded together in peace and put their petty differences aside. But he's still a warlord somehow.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a tiny niggle compared to the rest of this film. I mean, it's nonsense. You've seen this film before 1,000 times, and this isn't a good version of it.
What did Martin Kavanagh think of it?
We all thought the same. It was terrible. Like, there's dialogue where we openly laughed at the film. You know, for being terribly written. It was written by about 6 or 8 guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this, when the writing credit came up at the end, it was written by then a whole page of names. We were like, what? It felt like it was written by one guy late at night.
And who, was it not people in the cinema then or not?
No, there were about 6 people in the cinema.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah. And that was we went to the Picture House Pitch House East, is it called? The one in Stratford.
Oh, okay.
In the now almost deserted shopping mall next to the Westfield.
Oh, because
it's the
okay.
little one in Stratford that, next to the massive Westfield development. So, but it's a fiver to see a film, if
that's
you remember.
Good. Yeah, that's good.
Which is good.
Oh, on Mondays.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the best thing about it, actually. It only cost £5. But no, man.
It was not worth £5.
Judd Hirsch's character, who comes back from the 1996 film playing Jeff Goldblum's dad, all he does in this film is go on a road trip collecting a series of orphaned children in a bus.
That sounds a bit dodgy.
And then drives them into mortal danger. That's all he contributes
to the
film.
Isn't that sort of modern day Oliver Twist?
It's a bit, what, a sort of Fagin figure. Yeah, yeah, collecting these wayward children and then drives them directly towards where the battle for Earth is happening.
Why does he do that?
Doesn't really make any sense.
Sat-nav.
He says, oh, the safest place to be is with my David, which is Goldblum's character, who is a scientist working for the military. So it makes no sense.
And are all the children crying already because they've lost all their families? Are they just,
yeah, yeah.
Or are they crying just for about half an hour, then perfectly normal again?
They're sort of normal and sort of wisecracking by the end, even though their families are all
really,
dead.
I find the transition of grief in films...
It's amazing, isn't it?
Half an hour.
If we've ticked the grief box, then we can move on.
Yeah.
And my favourite one is actually Deep Blue Sea, which clearly had rewrites towards the end because test audiences didn't like Saffron Burrows but did like LL Cool J. So LL Cool J and the lead entirely boring white man...
He gets it eaten, LL Cool J, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. It's Saffron Burrows gets eaten in the last scene, spoilers, and then LL Cool J and the main guy... I just say, sort of laughing and joking because they've survived. You say, the woman you were supposed to really like got eaten seconds ago.
Yeah.
Seconds ago. Yeah. It's amazing, that film. It's better than this, though. No, and it's the most blatant setting up of a sequel I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, basically, Brent Spiner...
What was the box office of this? I'm going to look at
it
now.
I think it's been a failure because it cost $200 million. To make.
Yeah, 165 estimated $165 million. Opening weekend, $41
million. That's a failure then, isn't
it? Yeah.
That's a
catastrophic. So you might not
failure.
See the...
Its original title as well, this. Its working title was Independence Day Forever Part 1.
Oh, my God. So it doesn't actually even finish at all?
Well, it does... I can. Do you want spoilers, guys?
No,
spoilers.
You can't.
Really?
Spoilers.
No, okay, fine. I mean, nothing happens you weren't expecting already.
So don't go and see it.
Absolutely not. No.
5.7 on IMDb, Metascore 32. I'm going to give you the Rotten Tomatoes as well.
Yeah.
If you hang on for a second, because I mean, you could do this yourselves at home, but you're probably so engrossed in this podcast, and you think, I want to listen to this to get away from my computer screen.
Yeah. Famously.
33%.
33%, yeah. Well, I give it 2 Davids, I think.
That's really bad.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bad film. Famously, Susan Sarandon was offered the role of the President of the United States. And
what, in real life?
Yeah, that's right.
She'd be good, I think.
Yeah, she would. No, in this film, and President Ward...
Mm-hmm.
And she turned it down on the grounds that she read the script and was like, I don't know what's going on. What even is this? She goes, I just couldn't. I had no idea what was happening.
Well, I think it doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah.
What you do. In the past, I've turned a couple of things down because they were so bad.
Yeah.
Then seen people more famous than me actually doing the things, thinking, oh, right, I should have done.
Well, Will Smith wanted $50 million to do
wow.
two films, to do two, so 25 apiece. This film cost $200, so it would have been $25 million of the $200 budget going to Will Smith, and they said no. So there's a guy in it playing his son, and Will Smith is dead already. Randy Quaid is not honoured particularly in this film. His character sacrificed himself, didn't he, to save humanity? But you know, Pullman's good. He's really good in this. Actually, he's quality, and Goldblum is always watchable. Judd Hirsch is very charismatic, you know. It's got the other Hemsworth, not Thor, The other one.
Oh, right.
Liam Hemsworth playing a fighter pilot. You know, he's sort of fine. He's handsome.
But not as handsome as Chris Hemsworth.
Well, I don't think so. But who am I to judge? Yeah, no, it's just pointless, isn't it? It's rubbish.
Well, that was uplifting.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Do you know what?
What? Is it time for this?
Well, it turns out some people don't like writing letters. Most people don't like writing letters.
Yeah, we're a bit dry on the letters front, guys. So if you'd like to write to us with any film recommendations or conversation topics, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and fill in the form from there. Because we're running low. We're running low in the old letters tank.
Here we go. This is from Fran Jolly, a regular writer in her. Kung Fu Elliot is the subject.
Kung Fu Elliot. Okay.
Here we go. Hello again. You have been enjoying my Netflix movie recently. I don't know what that means. Maybe you've been enjoying Netflix films. I don't know. Have you tried Kung Fu Elliot? It is a documentary about Canada's answer to Jackie Chan if Jackie Chan was a massive Wally without any martial arts skills. Elliot, with the aid of his older, angry and naive girlfriend, make low-rent action movies with local actors. This sounds great.
It does.
This documentary follows then the making of his latest movie and the strange world of Elliot. It's certainly an enjoyable romp for anybody who's in low-budget movies and fans of American movie. One of the greatest films of all time, American movie. You must watch that. So this sounds great already. But many have their doubts over how factual the whole event is, like the original Catfish doc. Love to know what you guys think. Stay in there, Mac. I, for one, enjoy watching your YouTube. It's basically your response to me moaning about my career. Stay in there, Mac. I, for one, enjoy watching your YouTube channel and hope that Vulture will one day make you rich, corrupt old man, like Seth Blatter. Keep on watching the movies, Fran Jolly. Thanks, Fran. I mean, it's all kicking off outside, isn't it, with the sirens today?
Yeah, I mean, it's kicking off across Britain.
It's keep watching the films, Fran.
It's all right. He was paraphrasing. He was making it his own.
I think I might watch American movies to cheer me up. That sounds great.
Why not watch Kung Fu Elliot?
Yeah, you're right, actually.
I'll
do that.
Probably.
I'll try that.
Yeah.
Talking of recommendations.
Yes.
We've had a lot of people. I know Short Film Sunday, some other people recommended an old classic, which I got around to watching. Basically one of the greatest British films, A Matter of Life and Death.
Okay, when's this from?
I'll tell you about this. This is from 1946. It is a sort of romantic fantasy, quite surreal, strange film. It's by Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger, who were a writer, director, producer duo, who worked together on a series of films throughout the sort of 40s and 50s, and were quite famous for a lot of films.
Okay, that's a good part of history.
They used to write it. I think Pressburger would write it, then Powell would always direct it, and Pressburger would produce it. Other ones they've done, like The 49th Parallel, The Life and Death of Colonel Blimp.
Oh, that's a brilliant film.
Matter of Life and Death, Black Narcissus, The Red Shoes, and The Tales of Hoffman.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they're the big sort of 1940s and 50s duo.
Have you seen Colonel Blimp?
No, but I've heard you talk about it before.
It's wonderful.
But, I mean, this film is, it's got David Niven in it, and I'm a huge fan of David Niven. The quintessential Englishman, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the person, I think, that most Americans think
yeah,
that all British people are alike.
It was Niven, and then in the 60s, that sort of era, it became Michael Caine, who is sort of just a slightly rougher around the edges version of Niven, isn't
yeah,
he?
And Niven's got the, you know, because he fought in the war, didn't he? He's got the whole yeah, sort of there's something really assuring about David Niven. He just feels so English, and makes you feel makes me feel oddly at home and the world's sort of better place with people, sort of well-mannered, nice, sort of presentable, charming men. He's got a very, I wouldn't say he's, you couldn't call him especially handsome or huge, but
no.
But he's got such a really great face. I've always he's got that charm that of people. I'm quite interested to ask our listeners what people have got that charm and charisma. I think as many film stars have it these days. My mum said she can't tell the difference between people because they all seem to look the same in the cinema.
Well, they've gone towards sort of underwear models, really, yeah, in terms of looks, just like absolutely classic Caucasian men with incredible hair and sort of athletes' bodies.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, these guys aren't very interesting looking.
But that's what my mum said, everyone these days, they look all the same in the cinema.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, one of the many reasons why I'm not getting any work. But anyway, so David Niven, the story is, I'll get to it. It is 1940, right at the end of the war. David Niven is in his plane, flying back over the channel after doing his bombing raid.
It's this one. Yeah. Is it the one with him talking to the operator?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes, I know what we're talking about. Yeah.
And his plane is about to go down and he's about to die. His co-pilot's already dead, lying in his plane with him. And he's spending his last moments talking to the American lady who's based in the UK now on the coast somewhere, who's operating the radios and having a last discussion. And he happens to... it's really, really foggy and he falls in love with her over this conversation. I mean, that's what happened in the 1940s.
It is.
You would have to fall in love very, very quickly.
Well, because you might be dead tomorrow.
Yeah, so you've got to really go for it.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot less picky, but... so he falls in love, and there's a... And basically, there's a mistake, because heaven is this version of... it's all in black and white. They show heaven, and they monitor the amount of people who come into heaven, and someone goes missing, where his body was lost in the fog, so the angels forget to bring him up. And it is David Niven.
I didn't know this film had a sort of fantasy...
It's totally fantasy, yeah.
Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life kind of vibe to it.
Exactly. And it feels it's really different and quite refreshing. It feels a bit like being John Malkovich, surreal.
Okay.
But in the 1940s. But with a sort of more British, Englishy, quite feel to it. So the plot is very fantastical. So David Niven goes missing and he meets this American lady in real life and they fall in love, and then the angels have to go back and say, look, there's a mistake, you're supposed to be dead. And David Niven decides that he's going to argue that he has a right to life because of their mistake, and that he's fallen in love and it wouldn't have happened unless it was their mistake.
Okay.
So it's like nothing, yeah. You know, it's really original film, and it's thoroughly refreshing to watch an original film. And it's shot at the time. I mean, it's obviously dated hugely now because it's 70 years ago. Mm. It came out in 1946, but you can tell they tried to do some different cinematic effects with it. Shooting heaven in black and white, and it's got this escalator going up to heaven, which is a big set piece.
Is that where that comes from as well? The escalator to heaven?
I don't know if it came from that, but it was a huge part of the set. It just feels totally from a different age, I think, and it feels very innocent. I don't know if I really, really... I think some people really loved it. I think you will really like this film. I think in terms of it's, you know, quite... it's precisely written, it's interesting. It didn't totally capture me all the way through, but you know, it's in the British Film Institute has placed it number 20 in the best 100 British films of all time. You should really...
What's in their top 10? Have you got that?
I've got the full list here. I mean, a lot of them. The top 10 is The Third Man.
Yeah.
Brief Encounter.
Okay.
This is number three. Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
The 39 Steps, number 4.
Yeah.
I mean, David Lean's got great expectations. David Lean's got a great expectation to number 5. David Lean's got 3 in the top 5.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind Hearts and Coronets, number 6. Sure. Kez, 7.
Yeah.
9. So 8, Don't Look Now.
Yeah.
9, The Red Shoes, which is another Powell and Pressburger film I haven't seen.
Yeah.
10, Trainspotting. You can look this up online. A lot of them are films from the 60s and 70s. I mean, Trainspotting is really the only modern one to get in there. And The Long Good Friday is at number 21.
Great film.
So, if you like a good British black and white film that's unlike anything else, I think it is a good choice for a Sunday afternoon film.
Great.
I give it 7 Marricks. I think a lot of people would give it higher than that. I think the IMDb's rating from 8 and Rotten Tomatoes is something along the lines of 95. So, yes, go and check out that film if you want. I bought it on iTunes for about £2.50.
What's it called again?
A Matter of Life and Death.
A Matter of Life.
In America, it was originally called Stairway to Heaven.
Even though it's an escalator?
Yes, of course.
I mean, that's confusing. Well, that's it for this week. Once again, if you'd like to write to us, then please go to filmfandango.co.uk and there is a box you can fill in there. Or if you'd like to send us a file or a virus or something, then you can email us at dearfilmfandango@gmail.com.
Why would people want to do that?
Oh, I don't know, they might want to, you know. I don't know why people send viruses at all, but there must be some sort of kick out of it. Old people wouldn't do it, would they?
Old people?
Old people, yeah. It's mostly old people writing computer viruses.
I thought you said old people wouldn't do it.
No. Or people wouldn't do it.
Oh, okay. Because I doubt old people do it.
You don't think hackers are mostly old people in homes using the free Wi-Fi?
Or maybe
they are. Do old people's homes have free Wi-Fi?
That is a very, very good question.
Because it would be easy enough for them to have, but do they have it?
It would be a really good way of being a hacker if you have got... Have they got free Wi-Fi? Someone needs to find this out.
They do. If you work in an old people's home or know someone who lives in one or works in one, can you find out if they have free Wi-Fi?
Are you an old person?
Yeah, if you're an old person listening to this on your free Wi-Fi, then can you let us know? Go to filmfandango.co.uk. Also, we do all of this for free. So if you'd like to keep Film Fandango going for the foreseeable future, then please go to our website and click the donate button. And to everyone who has already, thank you very much.
And if you are an old person... And you are in this old people's home, and all everyone you know or close to has died, and you still have substantial assets.
Why not?
And the only comfort you get is listening to this podcast.
I mean, this is a long shot, man.
You could really do something great with that money.
Yeah.
Or forget about
it. You could donate it to Film Fandango, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Using your PayPal account that you clearly have as an old
person. We just need one old millionaire, David.
Yeah.
And things could be okay again.
Yeah, okay. One old millionaire. One old millionaire.
You can get... My name's Mark Larwood, and is David Reed.
Hello.
Don't make out the will to Film Fandango, because it would be very difficult.
It doesn't exist as a corporate entity, so legally it doesn't exist.
So that's what you have to do. I realise this podcast has now become one person.
One person.
A specific podcast.
Begging the nearly dead for their cash. But yes. That's fine, isn't it? You know, every now and again. Variety's the spice of life.
People have done worse things, David.
That's right, they really have. It's not like we're trying to seduce the old into, you know, people have done that.
Should we do?
You look like you were really visualising hard then. What were you doing?
I was visualising what I would do.
To seduce the old. All right, well, you continue doing it.
We'll keep that image on. Let that be the lasting image in your heads of this podcast.
Marek seducing the elderly. We'll be back next week. Keep watching the films.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.